Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf. Cindy, hey, Tony. How you doing?
You're all excited.
I am, because I love fall and winter.
That's because it's the end of summer heat, which is not your friend, right?
Nope, it is not, and I'm so excited. And it's getting to be fresh and crisp in the mornings out at the farm and really beautiful. And I was actually looking to see if there was anything I could plant for the fall, since this is a new experience for me having a garden.
Should have planted all that stuff. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm being critical. You should have planted all that stuff.
So for next year, when I get to the right time of the year to plant for the fall, I was thinking, oh, it would be so great to have collard greens. And looking at, like, you know, spinach, hardier spinach and things like that, I think that would be great to have. I love collards, so it would be fun to have a whole
beans
whole
and greens
group of
and squashes.
Those. Yeah, beans. Mm-hmm.
We talked about this program being all the things we're excited to cook and to make for the autumn, because it's funny, like, you get past Labor Day and all of a sudden you're just, wait a minute, there's a change. And
it's
autumn,
psychological. It's because of school starting, you know. I mean, it's just we have it in our brains that this is a different time of the year, even if it's still 90 degrees outside.
Well, it is only for a short time usually. Although there are those Indian summer crops that make it sort of extra interesting. Those, you know, I always look forward to it. Let's go ahead and just get into some of the things that you want to cook, that I want to cook. I know I made a top 10 list because I can't control myself because it has like 12 things on it.
Well, let me ask you just one thing, though. What do you think we're going to see at markets, you know, right now and for the next 2 weeks?
Right now.
Lovely.
Last really nice corn.
Okay.
Last really nice peaches. Those two things are about to go away very suddenly. Heirloom tomatoes, which have not been a great year, but heirloom tomatoes, the ones that are worthwhile, are going to be mostly smaller because people just didn't water them quite as much, and they're going to have good concentrated flavor. They're not quite the monsters you sometimes see with the Brandywines and the Amanas and some of those guys that get, you know, to be like pound and a half tomatoes.
Okay.
But some of those will be there. And then if we're lucky and we get a little Indian summer, we'll get late tomatoes. If the nights don't get too cool too quickly.
For. That would be great.
Every couple of years you get that Indian summer that's enough that, and it's not so much just the heat in the days, is it gonna stay dry and are the nights still a little warm?
Okay.
Once you get nights dipping into the low 60s and 50s on a consistent basis, the acids are really high and the tomatoes are not that nice.
Okay.
So that's kind of like, as long as you have the sunlight and the nights are not that cool.
So are pumpkins in market now?
Not yet.
Not yet, okay.
Not yet. Butternut squash starting.
Okay.
Acorn squash about to start. Sweet potatoes just starting.
Oh, goody.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
On my list.
See, that sweet
I'm
potatoes
so excited
brings,
about sweet
it's
potatoes.
Now it's a month that ends with an R, right? So you can smile about sweet potatoes.
And oysters.
Well, yeah, it's kind of convoluted logic I got going
it
there.
It is, but anyway. Right. Well, it'll be fun to go to market and see all this as things begin to change, and it really does.
Yeah.
And that's what I was talking to my cooks about. I'm like, even though it's still hot outside and can be as hot as 90 degrees, it is, as we were just saying, it's in everybody's mind. I said, we have to begin a bit of a transition into fall, even though it doesn't, we're not actually getting fall products.
Well, it's a time you don't always get, you might get like late tomatoes and the first good cauliflower or something. There are a few combinations that happen at the time of the year that's coming up that are things to look for that are a little bit different.
And celery's gone, right?
Celery's gone.
Well over? Okay.
Well over.
Yeah, I love getting local celery.
There's the second shot of garlic, not spring garlic, but the real stuff
is amazing. And Brussels sprouts too, right?
They're coming, but all those cabbage things, they do better with the first frost.
Okay. Oh.
It's one of those, like, if you have first frost, and if it's coming from, let's say, central Pennsylvania or from northwest Carroll County or something, they're going to get first frost a lot earlier usually than you do in central Maryland. But when first frost happens, you're going to get just more intense flavor on Brussels sprouts, on cauliflower, on all the cabbages.
Okay.
The big Savoy cabbages, that kind of stuff. It doesn't mean the stuff isn't really nice.
Mm-hmm.
You can
mm-hmm.
make fantastic coleslaw and that kind of stuff right now.
Okay.
I mean, that's what's on my brain is it's fun. I was just talking to one of our guys yesterday about making a pepper slaw, because there's still some sweet peppers in the market. The green apple's coming in the market. there are a few hot peppers in the market, and there's plenty of cabbage. So why not make an early autumn pepper slaw as a side dish for?
Right, and that's a cold dish, so it's still appropriate for the weather.
Exactly.
But you're utilizing.
But you happen to have this moment in time when these products are coming together and they're all fresh, and I think that's one of the coolest things about cooking and one of the coolest things about paying attention to the seasons.
Yeah. Well, this is a good transition time because this is a transition where we actually have product going from one product to another. Unlike in the spring when we're all just can't wait for asparagus and can't wait for, you know, that first product. And we're all, you know, we're still dealing with winter time and there not being anything. And this is a good transition time.
Well, so summer to fall is excited. Always that transition from abundance. There are things to play with. And the combinations are a little bit different every year because of the quality of things.
Well, and I think I should explain too, because I'm the chef, but I'm asking you about the farmers because you're the one that's always had this relationship with these farmers, our local farmers. I mean, you've been working with them for many, many years, and so you're the one that's always gone to market. So that's it. I cook it. You have always brought it to me.
I'm the idiot that doesn't sleep.
No, well, I'm thankful for what you've done all these years, and and that's a big deal, you know, and.
It's exciting.
It's good that you've had all these years now behind you of talking with all these farmers, and you really have a very clear understanding of what's going on.
It's not any different than understanding it is different than understanding what's going on with the wine, but growing products are growing products.
Well, and that's why it's exciting for me to actually have my own garden, even if it's a small one. Yeah. It's been a fantastic learning experience for me, and I'm really anxious to continue to learn about growing food.
And you're going to figure out what is going to be great there and what's going to be mediocre there.
Exactly.
And what you're not going to want to grow and what's
right.
going to be, you know.
Well, I think my biggest surprise has been I have, you know, just almost a whole 14-foot bed of lemon verbena, and I would never have thought that would do well, and I'm so excited.
You may have the most lemon verbena in your garden of anyone. And
well, I know we've never been able to really get it. I mean, the only lemon verbena I remember getting is from my cousin up in Pennsylvania. So I'm super excited to, you know, have that. But, yeah, it has been a great experience, too. And now we'll see what I can grow next fall, into next fall.
Maybe your Instagram handle should be Verbena Queen.
I'll stick with Chef Wolf.
So tell me, what of the things that are coming?
Well, you already named one of them. In the sweet potato. I love sweet potatoes. And you know, while I have a background in classic French cooking, of course, having gone to the school that I went to, and I love French food, obviously I have a Southern background.
There's not a whole lot of the Escoffier recipes for sweet potatoes.
No, there is probably zero. So sweet potatoes, yams, you know, any sort of that potato, colored potato tuber is just, I love them. And the inherent, obviously, high sugar level is incredible and so much fun to work with. And it really does lend itself to fall spices. And that's what's so perfect about sweet potatoes coming around now. You know, you always think of allspice or nutmeg, you know, cinnamon. I love a little bit of rum with my sweet potatoes when I puree them. Certainly brown sugar with sweet potatoes, a little butter, a little cream. And, you know, and if you want to go a completely different route, you could do something that's spicy. Maybe you're dicing and you're boiling the sweet potato instead of boiling to puree. You're actually adding cumin or toasted cumin or a little cayenne pepper or all of the above, you know, going in the whole sort of or tandoori spices or curry. All of those things are beautiful with sweet potatoes. I really like the idea of curry in particular with a savory sweet potato prep where you're putting salt in, you're putting pepper, cayenne in, black pepper and cayenne, and maybe even a tiny bit of Tabasco just to give it that acidic quality that the Tabasco or any of our hot spices that we love have to them, because they're in the end vinegar-based sauces. So I think sweet potatoes are one of my, and they're beautiful too. I love the color, and again, it speaks to fall. It's a fall color. So, and sweet potato soup is something I've never made before, and I'm going to make it this fall. Today, I'm going to make butternut squash soup for the first time. I can't wait. I can't wait to make it. And I soaked cocoa beans overnight, and in anticipation of making my soup today.
So people always love your butternut squash soup. Why not take people through what the
sure.
preparation is?
Well,
that's a product that does great in the area. It's abundant in the markets.
Okay,
there's a long season for it.
Well, just if you've never cut into a butternut squash, I'll tell you right now, the outer shell is extremely hard. So please be super careful.
Have a very sharp knife,
you're in trouble.
A very good way to hurt yourself.
Yeah, you're in trouble if you don't have a very sharp knife. And just realize that very sharp knife can miss the mark and hit something you don't want it to hit. So make sure you use, you know, a hand at one end of the blade and near the one end of the blade with your thumb above the blade, please, and your other hand grabbing the handle, and just, you know, sort of make a little cut to get yourself a spot to take the knife into, and then push down. And I might even suggest a wet kitchen towel underneath the, you know, obviously you're on a cutting board doing this, maybe even a wet towel underneath the butternut squash, so that that helps to keep it from sliding. And I tell you right now, like my mom has a glass cutting board, and that is the most dangerous thing I've ever seen in my life.
That gives me stress just thinking about
it. I know,
it
totally scares me. Please don't even think about cutting a butternut squash on one of those boards. So you really need a wooden board, which will have more texture to it and will be more grippy. Even what we use, we don't use wooden boards in the restaurant. We use, I can't even think of what that product is, but it's a type of plastic.
Melamine.
Yeah, melamine. And those are slippery. Those can be slippery too. So, you know, just be very conscious of what you're cutting the squash on, that you have a good, big, sharp knife, and that you are very careful. And then, of course, you have seeds inside. So I just use one of my kitchen spoons to scoop out the seeds. And by the way, you can roast those, and a little salt, a little corn oil.
And they're great.
Oh, they're delicious.
That also makes
a fun garnish. I mean, even if you don't just, like I would, eat them right out of the oven.
Yeah, those are a good football snack for
there you go.
An excellent local brew.
I mean, that's
nice, spicy little squash seeds.
That's good. And you could put a little cayenne on them, or cumin again on them. You can toss them in all kinds of things to spice them up and have them. Or you could grind them. You can roast them to the point of being ground, the seeds, and then pop them in your food processor and just grind them up a little bit. And you can use it as a wonderful little garnish for your butternut squash soup. So that's a beautiful thing about food. You can usually utilize almost the entire thing, which is
so
fantastic.
So you split that butternut squash.
I split it, scoop out the seeds, and cut it. I cut the outer shell off. So again, you have to be very careful doing that and discard that. And then I cut it into large pieces.
And you want just that tender orangey flesh.
Yeah. And I saute a small dice of andouille sausage with onions, a little bit of shallot, and in butter. I add a little bit of salt and pepper to that while it's working, and then I add the squash, work the squash in that. You know, this is probably maybe 10 to 12 minutes of sauteing these items, and then I add a good brown chicken stock, and it can just be chicken stock. I always run veal and chicken, so mine will have both products in.
So have a little more body to it.
Mm-hmm. Has more.
More base notes.
Right, exactly. And so I add the chicken and veal stock, and then I drain my cocoa beans, add my beans, and you don't have to use cocoa beans. You can use any kind of white bean that you like.
They're white beans in season, coming into season locally right now.
Which would be amazing. And honestly, if I was going to use a fresh local white bean, I would not puree the soup. I would do a small dice of the squash. I would do a brunoise, which is smallest of dice of the andouille.
I'd make it a little more rustic.
I would leave everything whole, and I would use those beans whole if I was using fresh beans. That would be really beautiful. But I puree my soup, so I'm using a dried cocoa bean. Add the beans, add the broth, and cayenne pepper, and let it go. You know, let it go until everything is tender, and then I puree it, and that's it. I don't add any cream to the soup. It doesn't need it. And I check it for seasoning, so I puree and blend. And the andouille sausage really acts as the spice. So if you don't want to use the andouille sausage, if you don't want meat in there, again, this is where I would introduce something like maybe a little bit of curry or cayenne and Tabasco or, again, cumin, something along those lines.
But you do that
right
from the beginning with the onion.
I would.
To develop the flavor.
You always want your spices in like that from the beginning. Watch your salt content. In the beginning, just add a little bit of salt. You can always add more salt at the end after you've pureed it, because of your long cook time with the beans, that liquid's going to reduce and you may end up a little bit too salty. But puree it, strain it, and then, you know, either use those roasted butternut squash seeds as a garnish, or use a little creme fraiche as garnish. Sometimes I add bacon to this soup, but that's entirely up to you. The andouille sausage is really kind of perfect. It's a great flavor profile for the squash itself. Spicy and sweet. Really nice.
Yeah, that's always terrific. It's funny, people want to drink Chardonnay all summer long, and I always wanted these gigantic, big, toasty, rich West Coast Chardonnays, and they're great, but they're not so refreshing when the weather starts to change and you're having a soup like this, and it has the sweet notes and it has the spice notes. Something with that kind of muscle and body that's so white is actually really attractive with that kind of soup.
Oh, good. That's great.
I was thinking you could also even just, like, toast some of that last corn, almost like popcorn, with a little bit of the spices you use in the soup, and use that as a garnish with a smooth soup for a little texture. And
okay,
that might be great.
What are some of your favorite things that came to mind immediately?
Oh, lots and lots of things. We're going to have to do that on our next segment.
Okay.
On Formula Wolf on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
You'd asked me a leading question before we broke.
I did. I asked you what your favorite number one thing was on your list of fall items.
I have to. It's funny. It's like I always think this is the all-American time for me. I think about what are the foods of the Americas. You know, this is the time for them. It is that last corn. It is the last tomatoes. It's the beginning of all the squashes. It's the beginning of all the heartier greens. And beans. I love beans. I love fresh beans.
Me too.
And when we get them, it just...
They're great.
It just makes me happy
when we get fresh beans. It makes a big difference when they're fresh. Yeah.
Well, you get a little more texture and the flavor's a little bit different. And the flavors are more individual. You spend so much time doctoring dried beans, it seems like, to do something. And it's nice to show them off. Mm-hmm. So, honestly, and the other thing I don't ever want to have in the summertime, I never want to eat risotto. But... Right now, Dixie Butterbeans are coming in, the little tiny sweet guys.
I love those things. Oh, my goodness.
And you can get them down south where they, like, boil them, and then they finish them off in butter with a lot of black pepper, and they're fine.
And is
they're
there
tasty.
Something wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with that, but I want them in risotto, you know?
Yeah, it's yummy.
I want really nice squash, a really nice pumpkin, like from a neck pumpkin, one of those peanut pumpkins, you know, that has really sweet flesh. I want that, roast that. In the oven, get it almost where it's dry like a paste, and use that with nice fresh onion. You can still get local onions. That's one thing people are much, much better about now than they were some years ago.
That's great.
Growing them all through the summer and into the autumn. But if you have that roasted pumpkin and the onion to get that risotto started, and you get those guys, get the rice toasted with the onion, pumpkin goes in. And as you begin to add stock and work that up, you're probably, when you're about halfway, when you're probably 12 minutes out on your risotto, that's when you go on with the fresh butter beans too.
Mm, yeah, yummy.
And all you need then is a really nice chili oil or a little bit of a relish as a garnish, and you have a fantastic vegetarian main course if you're using mushroom stock or something, vegetable stock.
Yeah, sounds good.
Or use nice chicken stock, white chicken stock maybe. For a little bit lighter flavor.
Are you putting cheese in to finish or no?
I would put cheese in to finish.
I would too.
Yeah, I
like
would definitely put
cheese
in to finish that. That's you have to finish that with Reggiano and with butter.
Yeah.
And what's in the market right at this moment? There are some Padron peppers.
Ooh.
That the farmers did not pick on time.
Oh boy.
When they were
green. Does that mean they're really spicy?
They're really red.
Ooh.
And they're hot as can be.
Oh my gosh.
But if you want to do some jars of like really good chili oil.
Oh boy.
They give great flavor.
Oh, I want some of those.
And a little drizzle of that. And a little drizzle of that, maybe a little bit of like crispy duck bacon or something, or a little crispy prosciutto or something,
mm-hmm.
if you're deciding to go ahead and garnish with that. That risotto would make me happy.
Yeah, I'd like
that
some.
Risotto I will make in about a week and a half, 2 weeks.
That sounds good.
When I get the first one of those pumpkins.
Okay.
But that's the first stuff in my brain.
Yeah.
How about you? How about something healthy? Autumnal and healthy. Is that on your list?
Sure. Well, I know we're going to get beets.
Yes.
So I really think...
Probably the best beets of the year coming.
Yeah, and
very soon.
I really do love working with beets, and the color is just so beautiful. I was thinking about doing it a couple of different ways. So if you have your roasted beets for your, let's just say it's a salad, and you have your, you know, this spinach that's going to be coming up soon, which would be nice, I would probably chiffonade the spinach. And add a little bit. Spinach enjoys...
There is good spinach coming out, too.
Yeah, spinach and orange are so good together, and beets like oranges, too. So if you do a chiffonade of spinach salad and toss in, say, supremes, which is the interior segment of the orange, with the spinach, and then lay out thin slices, almost like beet carpaccio, although it's been roasted, and build your salad on top of that, and then do also a little vinaigrette with your beets. And I like the idea of with those all those flavors to do a raspberry vinaigrette. So do raspberry vinegar, puree some of your roasted beets with salt, a little bit of corn oil. You need a neutral oil, and make a vinaigrette that way, and a little salt and pepper. Puree it, strain it, have it ready to go, drizzle that around, and also maybe a little bit of walnut oil on the greens so that you have this opposite sort of tone. And again, it's a fall product.
Well, walnut oil is so like bitter and rich at once.
It would be really great with the oranges and the spinach, the hearty spinach, and then you have this sort of separate vinaigrette for your beets with the raspberry in it, and that gives you acid and richness, and I think that would be a fun salad, and you can add other things to it, certainly. I think one of the other things is just working with Brussels sprouts, because Brussels sprouts are, you know, how do you cook them? Yeah, what's the right way to cook them? And what can you really do with Brussels sprouts that's interesting?
People hated Brussels sprouts with a passion when I was a kid.
And I did too, but now I love them. Yeah, I love them now. So
it's like the entire nation has become oriented towards Brussels sprouts and kale.
Yeah, if you didn't want to sell something on a menu, say even 10, 12 years ago, if you put Brussels sprouts on there, you'd get what
we call a deal breaker.
Definitely. Well, it used to be, yeah, there are a number of things
it
I
used
can
to be
tell you.
The three magic deal breakers were always Brussels sprouts,
collard greens,
and olives.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, which is weird. But, I mean, now, I mean, everyone loves all of those things.
America's outgrowing some of its food fears. It's a cool thing to be witness to.
Well, it's good to be a part of, because as a chef, you want to work with all those things and not have it be a deal breaker and have an item that you really want to make not sell because people are scared of la, 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 whatever it is. Olives, I mean, and also, I mean, when you think about it, it's availability. We didn't used to get olives like we do now. When I was, you know, first cooking in the 80s, you couldn't get Niçoise and Picholine olives. Those were not things that were delivered to a restaurant, you know, so in the United States anyway, at least not in my experience. So, you know, products availability has just changed so much.
Yeah.
No, and that is also part of demand is what has, you know, brave chefs, you know, putting things like that on their menus and eventually coming, you know, the guests coming around to, oh, yeah, I really do like this. And then there is a demand for the product.
It's important that chefs engage in this risk-taking behavior.
God.
So, how about something? I actually forced you into a corner to make salad. How about something a little bit more decadent?
As if, oh my God. I think with, another item I had on my list was venison. And, you know, we do think too about, you know, hunting this year, time of the year. Of course, we use farm-raised venison at the restaurant, and I typically don't work with it in the summertime. It's not to say you shouldn't, but I just don't think of it as of putting venison on my menu in the summertime. I know there's something about the flavor profile.
Yeah,
of
I have
venison.
Game and game birds on my list for autumn. It's funny how that perspective changes, even on the proteins that you want to have.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, thinking about venison is actually pretty good for you, because if you think about it, it's super lean. So it's actually low in fat, it's low in cholesterol, it doesn't have as many calories as my favorite, you know, as something like beef.
There's not a whole lot of corn-fed venison. You're talking about a grass-fed meat, which is always going to be easy to digest and better for your system.
And I think one of the things about eating farm-raised venison is that it has a more mild flavor to it than wild, and it is probably, I'm sure, more tender since it's been farm-raised. And you really want to cook, if you have a strip loin or a primal cut of venison that you're working with, let's say you're grilling it, you really want to grill it to medium rare. It needs to be rare or medium rare because of its lack of fat. It dries out very quickly and becomes very chewy and unappealing in texture, and also the flavor just really starts to become sort of that weird, gamey, almost livery, not appealing livery tone to it. And, you know, a good simple marinade of something you used to do, which was juniper berries and star anise pounded together for pork, I think would be delicious on venison. Rosemary is beautiful with venison. Thyme, any of those really sort of strong, pungent, beautiful, oily herbs like that really work well with venison. And then good salt and pepper. I mean, you don't need acid in your marinade. You just, to me, I would, or you can go the route of onions, red wine, a little garlic, and go the acidic route, but I certainly wouldn't put vinegar in there. I would, if I was going to use some sort of acid, it would be in the form of wine.
You know what's incredibly good with venison, grilled venison, rare like that, is really good Argentinian Malbec.
Oh, good.
That the floor, it's funny that like that there's a mineral character to it, but there is a floral aromatic. There's almost a violet aromatic that always seems to connect with that for me.
That makes sense. And then I think when you're working with something like venison, because it is so lean, this is your chance to make a richer side dish, something that has fat in it, like maybe risotto or a potato gratin or potato puree or celeriac puree or something that's in season.
Like the sweet potatoes you're talking
parsnips
about.
Parsnips or sweet potatoes. I mean, parsnips are also something that we're going to be seeing. Parsnips and celeriac, oh my goodness, roasted together, very simply seasoned, thinly sliced, peeled thinly sliced, are wonderful vegetable accompaniments for something like venison.
They never feel super heavy either. You know, what's funny, one of the traditional things in the autumn, neither one of us has mentioned yet, and that you said venison, and I was thinking about game birds like quail and or even guinea fowl, just a bird with more flavor. Mushrooms.
Oh, I know. I love mushrooms so much, I feel like I talk about them all the time.
But I guess until the rain comes, like it's almost like you reserve that, you know, you use them, but the real desire for them is not the same until, like, the leaves are falling from the trees or have fallen from the trees, and you know that
there are mushrooms hidden
at it again.
On that forest floor underneath those wonderful wet leaves. Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. I'm hoping to goodness that I have some edible mushrooms somewhere on my property, although that does scare me a tiny bit because you really need to know what you're doing.
Yeah, you may want to
forage for those. Well, yeah, it would be for me, not for anybody else. But, I hope that we'll see some morels, maybe some porcinis. It just depends. And it's usually a very short window in the fall.
Well, your hope is really for
chanterelles,
hen of the woods and that sort of, those big dramatic, you know, tree stump mushrooms, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So what else is on your list? Because mushrooms are putting it off.
Okay. So one of the things also that's, you know, such an everyday thing, but gosh, is it wonderful when it's fresh and local, is broccoli. And, that's a great vegetable. I mean, it's so good for you and in so many different ways. So really barely cooking it is, I think having it be a little bit overly crunchy is so good. And, you know, you were talking about the padron peppers. I don't cook a lot with garlic, but broccoli, garlic,
they do well with a little spice for sure.
Yeah,
too.
A little spice on there. Good extra virgin olive oil or, again, some sort of a nut oil with broccoli would be delicious. But
for me, that's one of number one places I want a little bit of soy or sesame oil and a little chili because broccoli can handle it. I hated broccoli so much when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So much.
Yeah.
And
now you love it.
I like it a lot. I'm over that, obviously. It was really the only thing I can think of as a kid I didn't like.
Huh.
But my daughter loves it and has loved it from the beginning.
Good.
And she loves her little trees.
They are kind of like little trees.
And she likes them crunchy, so.
Yeah, that's good. Well, that's great. It's
much better child than me.
And broccoli, whether you make a salad with it or it's a vegetable accompaniment for a great piece of chicken or, one of your game birds like guinea fowl or pheasant. I don't really think of those two things together, but you could certainly do it. Anything neutral like that, white bird, really is good with, chicken and broccoli are perfect together. And then there's also the idea of making a gratin, maybe again, it's not so cooked that you're losing all your wonderful vitamin content or color, but something very simple with good oil and going that route with a gratin. Gratin really truly just means using a gratin dish. It doesn't, I think a lot of us think, oh, cream and cheese. And no, that's just something that goes into a gratin.
Yeah, and usually you gratiné it.
Right, right. Gratiné means brown.
Heat from the top.
So. Right. So, or if you want to go the rich route, some beautiful cheeses like Gruyere or any sort of good melting cheese is great with a little bit of cream and maybe a little bit of shallot, salt and pepper, and a tiny bit of butter in with your broccoli to make a richer gratin. And you want to blanch, in that case, you're going to pre-cook your broccoli. You're going to blanch it in salted water. You're going to shock it in an ice bath to stop the cooking process. I would cut it into pretty small pieces and then put it in the gratin dish. Broccoli has a high water content, so you have to consider that when you're making a gratin. It will water itself down. So, you want to have almost reduced cream in there with it is the best route to go. So it's a little bit more time consuming to make a creamy gratin like this, because you really need to put the cream on to reduce. You need to blanch your broccoli, as I said, cut it into small pieces and shock it, and then put the gratin together. Have a good amount of cheese, but don't overdo it. Salt and pepper, and like I said, maybe even a little bit of onion product.
Breadcrumb or no?
Breadcrumb would be great. Breadcrumb is always nice, and you want to put that on near the end of the process. And
just so
I would do
breadcrumb.
You do like garlic, you could add a little bit of garlic to that butter. Butter poach the garlic and then add your breadcrumb, and that's going to smell good. It's going to taste good. So if you do enjoy garlic with your broccoli, that's a good way to go too. And it's gently cooked, so it's a little bit easier on your stomach as well. But you could also make something almost like spoon bread with broccoli, which again, now you're really chopping it fine. So we've gone from extremely healthy to
Broccoli, corn, and chilies sounds awfully good as a combination to me. Mm-hmm. Use some of that last corn and some of this first good broccoli, and you've made something almost like a skillet spoon bread or skillet cornbread with those items and a little bit of fresh corn.
Right. Or you could you know, make almost like a flan spoon bread, you know, form, which is cream, eggs, salt, pepper, and you cook your polenta or corn in the cream, then you add the egg, salt, and pepper, and then you add your, again, blanched off, very finely chopped broccoli to that. Oh my gosh, that would be delicious. Again, rich. Yours is, you know, version is more healthy. There's a lot. Don't be sorry. There's a lot you can do with broccoli.
It's funny, we're talking about all of these things, and my brain immediately thinks about the wine for that,
Of course.
The biggest common denominator as I head towards autumn cooking is I want things to spend more time in oak barrels than I ever do in the summertime. In the summer, you want everything always clean and fresh and as refreshing as it can be. In the autumn, you want the toasty spice of having something have spent a passage of time in oak barrels, mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. regardless of sort of what the different matches are. It's an excuse to introduce that additional flavor element. It's going to match up with what you're cooking. When we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, we're going to do one or two more autumn dishes and then a little chef challenge. All of that on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, what else do you need to talk about? We're having food therapy on Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. What else do you need to talk about for autumn upcoming?
I have a surprise. I'm making a quail broth today when I go in.
Oh, that's cool.
So we deboned our quail yesterday. So, of course, I have a decent amount of quail bones. And
that's a labor of love and or neuroses.
It truly is, because
it's a lot of
so
little
tiny.
Bones.
It's so tiny. So we browned the bones, made the stock last night. Very straightforward. Mirepoix, carrot, celery, onion, a little bay leaf, and peppercorn. And I put nothing else in there. No wine, no herbs, no spices.
So just clean.
Yeah, very clean. Brown the bones. And because they're so lean, there's no fat, really very little fat to worry about. But you do want to skim the fat off the top as it comes up. And so we made the stock yesterday, and today I'm ready to go in and garnish it. And we were talking about autumn mushrooms, so I'm definitely going to use whatever mushrooms are coming in today that we actually get. A little bit of shallot, garlic, leeks, carrots, and I am going to put fresh thyme from the garden in, and then I'm going to garnish it with brioche crouton, and we'll pour the soup tableside with the mushrooms in the bottom, which allows the mushrooms, instead of putting them in the soup, I'm going to garnish the soup, which means I can re-caramelize the mushrooms.
When that broth hits those mushrooms,
it's gonna
the aroma
so
at the
good.
Table is going to be amazing.
Oh, I can't wait. And I'll probably put a little bit of thyme in. You have to be careful with something like thyme. It's so strong that you can't, and you don't really want to eat a piece of it, but I may put a few leaves from the thyme plant in too, so when the hot broth hits that will be really pretty. So I'm very excited about that, and I basically have no meat product in there, so I could change it by adding something, but I'm not going to.
There's an old school Italian dish that's anolini in brodo, and that quail broth made me immediately think of you use all the whatever you're making the broth from, you use the organs and like wing meat and all that kind of business to make force meat with Reggiano and a little bit of prosciutto and breadcrumb and And in the case of this, you might use a little bit of the sweet onion, you know, that's been like just sweated. And it's almost like a ravioli that's slightly overfilled, so it's a little bit thick.
Mm.
And you yeah, you warm those guys in
Please.
The broth. You cook those guys in the broth.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, and serve it that way. Oh my!
Oh yeah.
Gosh.
Oh, and actually, when you said prosciutto, you just put that in my head because I usually leave that to Julian to work with, of course. So, but I may walk across the street and get a little bit of prosciutto to garnish the soup with because I never get to work with it, and I do love prosciutto.
Might be nice to roast those mushrooms. Roast those mushrooms with.
Or I could get a little country ham. But yeah, so that and what else is on my mind are apples and pears and walnuts and chestnuts, because I'm lucky, blessed, whatever, to have chestnuts and walnut trees on my property. And I have pear and apple, but not too blessed there because I receive no fruit from those trees. And they just, I think they're old and they need some attention. But on top of that, I have a mean squirrel or a family of them that lives on my property that ate all the apples and pears.
The squirrel syndicate.
Yeah. So,
stole all the fruit.
So thankfully we have farmers that don't have my issues and I can get.
Apples are coming.
Yeah,
Honeycrisp will come early this year.
Oh, I love Honeycrisps. I can't wait. So apples and pears and. I mean, I would really like to do an apple and pear and walnut salad, and I really, really want to make a chestnut risotto this year. So I've never made chestnut risotto, and I love making chestnut soup, which when I make the chestnut soup, I garnish it with pears poached in port, and then that port poaching liquid, I reduce down and make a gloss with it and garnish the soup with that. I did that for a wine dinner we did a long, long time ago. It might have even been, you know, before.
That's for a cold day. That's a rich sounding dish.
Ooh. And also you know what though? What would be fun is to do a chilled pear soup right now. So if we're getting
the very first are coming.
While it's still hot, it would be so great to do a chilled pear soup. And, you know, you could finish you could just do you don't even have to cook the pears. You could just puree the pears with a little bit of lime and maybe garnish with a little bit of creme fraiche. But, I mean, you don't have to do that much to it. Or you could cook the pears with port. You know, there are a million different things you could do to make a beautiful, whether it's a cooked pear soup and then chilled or a fresh pear soup chilled.
As I have no time to make ice cream, although I'm always desirous of making ice creams, one of the things that come this fall is pear cider.
Oh.
When pear cider comes. It's been in my brain to make a pear cider ice cream, but garnish it with walnuts that have been candied with cognac and maple.
That sounds good. Wait a minute. We can get pear cider?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I need some of that.
Oh.
Oh, sure. Well, you talk.
That's,
don't tease me like this.
I don't have that many secret farm products from you.
No, you don't. All right. Well, that sounds good.
There's only so
pear
much of
cider
that
ice cream. Good idea. All right.
Yeah,
so are we chef challenging?
I think that's reasonable.
All right. So I have a very exciting scenario for you.
All right.
Okay. So here's your list. And I'll
a very exciting scenario.
Yes.
That's okay. All right. What is my
So I have this cutting
scenario.
I have this cutting
Am I
board.
Doing this in the in the East Wing of the White House or something?
Oh, that would be fun. That would be very exciting. I have a cutting board that one of my purveyors gave to me for Christmas, and it says that one of the first ingredient is a buffalo, and you're working with hundreds of pounds of food. So for this, you're cooking for 100 people.
Okay, then.
In a commercial kitchen, not at your house.
Okay. Is there a particular event or?
Oh, yes. It's a wedding in the fall.
A fall wedding. Goodness.
For open-minded people.
I guess so, because the only protein on your list is venison. Well, no, your venison and squab. Yeah, this is.
It's a wedding for 100 people.
A hunt and harvest themed wedding. Goodness. All right. So the venison. People always have these. They have stations parties and they have seated events. I think sometimes the best ones are where people walk around and they just get like a million tapas or a million little fabulous snacks passed to them, and then they can get a plate of something. Like when they've actually had a couple of glasses of wine, they're like, okay, we better eat something. They can get a plate of something. So I think the venison I want to reserve for that main course. And it needs a starchy something with it. And you've got all kinds of goodies here. The venison, you were
so
talking about doing a
list?
Puree.
What's
my list is sweet potato, red beets, venison, squab, parsnips, celeriac, garlic, carrots, butternut squash, chestnuts, walnuts, butterflower, ales, eggs, sorry, cornmeal.
You could have some ale, too.
Yeah. I mean, the butterflower, eggs, cornmeal, and the chestnuts. I want to make cornbread with the chestnuts and have that as a side dish on the main plate. I want to, that venison, the primal cuts, I hope it's a lot of venison.
It is.
If it's primal cuts, I'm going to want to grill it, relatively rare. And there's really not a whole lot to do with this. It'd be fun to, gosh, the carrots, the parsnips, the celery root, to do all those guys as batonnet and just do a sauté with garlic on the side for the venison. Venison, as far as the sauce, if I had the goods to make, you know, like that sort of caveman romesque sauce that I like to make with the almonds and the tomato and the garlic and the smoked paprika and mm-hmm. wine vinegar, that's a good garnish for that, and will be nice with the vegetables as well. And the cornbread. I think that's an easy main plate. The butternut squash and the walnuts, butternut squash is definitely going to be a soup to pass. Sweet potatoes I'd want to do as chips, and if I could garnish those chips with a little bit of like, if there's blue cheese around, I would make a little bit of like a blue cheese mousse with a little bit of sweet onion and pipe that onto sweet potatoes and pass that as an hors d'oeuvre. The beets, I'd want to serve the beets where it looked like, you know, like tono crudo, mm-hmm. where you have tuna and you cut the big fat cubes and you garnish it with sesame and chili oil and a little citronette and that sort of business. I'd want to pass those guys like they were, you know, like they were those cubes with those garnishes. What else have I got to play with here? Oh, the squab. That's the trick is with the pigeon.
Cooking squab for 100 people.
Yeah, cooking squab for 100 people. You have to do something with legs. I mean, you want the breast. I mean, again, you're talking hors d'oeuvre time for this stuff, so you'd want the breasts where you can roast them individually. If you could maybe wrap those guys in a little bit of bacon or something like that after seasoning them.
You're cooking in a restaurant kitchen, yeah. So you have what you need.
Yeah. I think that would be fun as a pincho with a little bit of like smoked potato and a little bit of reduction for that, just a red wine reduction with a little bit of veal stock. So that gives you one heavy thing to pass. You need a cold thing to pass, the beets we talked about. Crispy thing to pass, sweet potato we talked about. And I think I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the breast. The legs, the legs I'd want to batter and deep fry after Frenching them, so you had them like little...
Yum.
Yeah. You do the wings you can't get much from besides the stock.
No.
So you save that for the future. But the legs, yeah, deep fry those guys.
I deep fried squab legs one time for a different a wine dinner that we did, and they were so good.
I have no wedding cake, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Yes.
Yeah.
I thought maybe you'd make tarts with the...
Yeah, cornbread. I have no fruit. I'm not making buttercream. Sorry.
Okay. All right. Do I have a situation here?
You have a situation. Yes, you have a situation. Not as situation. Ridiculous as the last one. You're in the headquarters of some sort of a nonprofit, and you're doing dinner for 20 people in this magnificent room that has a pretty makeshift like catering kitchen for you to work out of.
Okay.
But you got all your like regular goodies. You got your toolbox, and you got probably, let's say, one bus tub of tricks up your sleeve.
But I have a stove.
Along with you. And you have a range, and you have an oven.
Okay. So duck legs, last corn, last Roma tomatoes, which I can't believe I can read, little neck clams from the Chesapeake, Tuscan black kale, cauliflower, sesame seeds, soy, cider vinegar, blue plums, red something potatoes. What does that say?
Red skin?
Red skin potatoes. Duck legs, corn, aromas, clams. And it's 20 people. Duck
20
legs.
People, and it's well, and
I'm,
it's seated.
I'm comfying the duck legs, there's no question. So that is getting confied. And I'm going to make a sauté for the duck leg confit with the Tuscan kale and the corn. So I'll, again, chiffonade the Tuscan kale, sauté it in a pan with the soy and the I'll toast the sesame seeds on the side and add a little bit of salt to them, and then I will put in the corn at the end and garnish with the finish with the soy and the sesame seeds, and actually even a little cider vinegar, which would be kind of good.
That all sounds nice with a duck confit leg.
And then I have so I have the clams. So I'll steam open the clams. So I have basic things. So you said a bus tub of something. So
yeah.
Shallots, garlic, a little bit of white wine, and I'll mandir the Roma tomatoes. So that means you cut a little X in the bottom of the Roma tomato. You blanch them for all of about 15, 20 seconds in boiling water. Immediately shock them in ice water. And what you're doing is you do that so you can remove the skins. Remove the skin. Cut them open, remove the seeds, and dice them. So I'm steaming open my clams, and right at the end, as the clams are just beginning to open, pull the clams out, begin to reduce that liquid down to somewhere near sauce consistency, and finish with a small dice of those mandired Roma tomatoes. And, you know, I'm going to put some potatoes in there. So I'm going to do a brunoise of the...
You're making a chowder.
Of the red sky potatoes, the red skin potatoes, a brunoise of those that were blanched off in water with salt, and I will put those in at the end with the tomato, and I will finish with a little bit of extra virgin olive oil with that broth, and so the clams would be first course, and then the duck legs are the last course. So I have a vegetable course I can do with the cauliflower. Yeah. So the cauliflower actually, the cauliflower, yeah, I don't have enough ingredients here. So blue plums, I'm going to make sabayon for the blue plums, and that's going to be my dessert. That's predictable for me because as a chef, while I know how to make pastry, certainly, that is go-to dessert.
That's a great dessert.
I love sabayon.
You're going to do anything to the blue plums? Blue plums, the Italian prune plums, are pretty firm and pretty tart.
I love them. I'm going to roast them. So I'll coat them with sugar and lime and cut them in half, coat them with sugar and lime, and roast them until they begin to dry a little bit. And then
with skins or no skins?
With the skins, because the skins have such amazing juice underneath them. And what that's going
to
actually...
They have a little tannin, too.
Yeah, that's going to produce juice in that roasting pan, and I'm going to take all of that and add it to my sabayon, so mount it into the sabayon. And actually, I think I'm going to make champagne sabayon. I think that would be really pretty with the plums, so and sort of festive for a charity event. That would be pretty. And back to the cauliflower. I'm going to make a cauliflower soup amuse, which I'll reserve some of those red potatoes and cook it down with water, salt, pepper, cauliflower, the potatoes, and make a puree that and make a soup for it.
Hors d'oeuvre.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a nice menu.
Good.
I hope they raise a lot of money.
I hope so, too.
Well, that's all we have time for on the Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
If you'd like to download this and listen to this or any other broadcast of our programs, please look for the podcast on the WYPR website, wypr.org. If you want to correspond with us, you can email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf or on Instagram as Chef Wolf.
Thanks so much for listening.
And have a great Sunday.